One point I did want to add last time, what we said last time, that people, when analyzing the Holocaust, they say that if we would have done this, or if we would have done that, then we could have spared ourselves. That may be true, but it is, I can't say whether it's true or not. But the point is that it's an absurd statement anyways. Because since the only reason that Klal Yisrael suffers is when they don't operate according to Chachma, according to Derech of Chachma, and that's why they cause themselves problems, plus the fact that they don't have any of the assistance of the Ashgacha. So the only thing a rational person should say was that if I would have been rational, it wouldn't have happened. And that's absolutely true. But to point to particular things may be interesting, but that is not the solution. Because a person who is on the whole irrational cannot point to a particular rational thing that they should have done. That would be like a person who plays a stock market and said, if I only would have done this right, then I would have done, yeah, that's but if he would have been rational, he probably wouldn't have been there to begin with. so it is absurd in an irrational frame for a person to say that if I would have done this one rational move in an irrational frame, that he's the outcome would have been different. It's an absurd thing. The only thing a rational person would say is, if I would have been rational, it wouldn't have happened. And that is true. If Klal Yisrael would have been on a level where they were operating with Chachmas or Derech HaChachmah, Chachmas Hashem, then it would not have occurred. And the Holocaust would not have occurred. So it is ridiculous to go back and point to particular things. Of course, if they were totally working according to the Derech HaChachmah, then they would have been the means that the Derech HaChachmah means keeping the entire Torah according to the whole way that the system entails. And that's the only thing you can say. That's the only thing you can say. You can't say if I would have been rational at one point, I would have. that's an absurd. Just like it's absurd in any area if a person says, if I would have been rational at one point, yeah, but the reason why you weren't rational at one point is because you're totally irrational to begin with. Okay. But now the question was brought up, the question was raised, that, moreover, I mean, to lament over one irrational point when the whole system is wrong is in itself an absurdity. The person wants to lament, they should lament over the state, the fact that it was totally wrong. All right, but now another point, but a question was raised as to what about the idea, and this is brought up many times, that the Gedolei Yisrael were in error with regard to the Holocaust. And this brings up a question of Das Torah, the idea of Das Torah, or following the Das Torah. Dolom in Europe.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because don't leave Europe for either Israel or America.
Right.
Because it's a trade for land and you lose your pay. And the result was they stayed in Europe and left alive. That's a classic argument, isn't it?
But they said don't leave Europe. Okay. Yeah.
What did you say?
All right. But the question is, how does Yadis...
Wait.
But the question, of course... The question, of course, is one obligated to listen to Gedolim with regard to political decisions. That's the question. Plain and simple. All right. So I mean, thank God we have a system of Torah. We have to take a look at the system and see what it says with regard to that. Do we have to listen to Gedolim when it comes to certain to that area or not? That's the question. All right? What do you say about it? I don't think anybody has made a documented study here about what the Gedolim said and which Gedolim said in the Holocaust. I mean, I don't know. It's a study in itself. But assuming, let's assume that they decided that we should, that the Jewish nation should remain in Europe. Let's assume that. Okay, is one bound to follow their conclusion? That's the question.
Yeah.
See, you have to understand you have to understand, first of all, when do we listen to Gedolim? That's the question. When do we listen to Gedolim? And where does it say that we have to listen to Gedolim? And the answer is, because it's a pasuk, Acharav Lahatas. Acharav Lahatas means that we have to follow the psak of Rov of the Sanhedrin. And you have to follow the psak al pi atara sheyerucha, al mishpat asheyom alocha tase. So the pasuk says that you must follow the Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin of the Gedolei Yisrael, and when they make a decision, you must follow them. Now the question is, the next question that we have to ask is, why must we follow them? And there's two possible answers. You must follow them because they're right. That's one answer. The second answer is you must follow them because that's what the Torah dictates. Simply, the Torah dictates to follow them. Which one of the answers is correct? A or B? What do you say? B is right. Second one is right. The reason why we follow the Gedolei Yisrael is not because they're right. Because even if you know that they're wrong, the halacha is that you must follow them. That's why it says, Lo sasur min adavar she'yagid l'cho yomin u'smol. Chazal say, even if they tell you your right hand is your left hand is your right hand. What does it mean? It means to say, if I know 100%, I'm a great theoretician, I know 100% that they're wrong. Nevertheless, I must follow the halacha that they prescribe. Why do I have to follow their halacha? Even though they're wrong? Because that's the nature of the halachic system. In theory, I can argue with them. I can argue all the way down the line, till Moshe Rabbeinu, till I get to a point where I know that something is part of Torah Shebaal Peh that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. But anything that's not part of Torah Shebaal Peh, Machlekes Tanoim, I could sit down, I could argue with Rabbi Meir, with Rabbi Yehuda, I don't care who you paskin like. In theory, I could say one is right. Where can I not say that? Where can I go against? Where can I not go against where it's a matter of Allah? Allah, I can't go against it. Because that's the nature of the halachic system. There would be no halachic system if, in fact, I could go against what they say. However, in theory, I can argue. That's why the Rambam says that when it comes to philosophy, there's no psak. You have many different views. There's no psak when it comes to philosophy. Who is right philosophically? We don't know. There's no way to paskin philosophically. So when you have an argument, I mean, you see, even the Rambam in his Mora many times goes against what Chazal say in philosophy. Several times. I mean, not that the Rambam didn't have the greatest respect for Chazal, you see the way he writes about them, but he still didn't feel bound. I mean, he was on a tremendous level, and he didn't feel bound by certain Chazal. I mean, certain Chazal, he wouldn't even if you look at the Mara, it's an interesting thing. Certain areas he doesn't, like the famous question Rabbi Eliezer, leaves it as a question. He doesn't understand. He knows. After Chacham knows where and when to maneuver. The Rambam knew, but the Rambam held in certain areas that he is not bound by the philosophy of Chazal. And the Ramban, of course, in the Vikuach, in his argument with the with Pablo Cristiano, mentions that the Midrashim, he says, we have Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaal Peh, which we're bound to accept, but a Midrash I'm not bound to accept. And you have to know what and where, and the system isn't just a simple system of belief. You have to know what and where. So when it comes to philosophy, when it comes to theory on halachic points, there is no obligation to follow Gedolei Yisrael. There's no halacha, there's no psak halacha in that area. If we said you follow the psak of the Gedolim because Gedolim are infallible, then of course it wouldn't make any difference whether it was halacha or whether it was philosophy or whether it was theory. It would be an issa to say that I hold like the other sheikh. What would the issa be? Midvar sheker techok. You're not allowed to associate yourself with a lie. So if Gedolim in fact would be able to tell us what the true reality is, then you wouldn't be allowed to go against them in any area. And that's why many people feel that when it comes to philosophy, they don't understand what it means when it comes to philosophy, that there is no psak. The Rambam means there can't be any psak in philosophy, because psak is only a matter. Why do you have the whole institution of psak? Because otherwise you have no system of halacha. Halacha means to follow. Halacha, to go. And you can't follow when there's 20 paths in front of you, you don't know which path to take. It's an impossibility. All of Klal Yisrael would have been lost if that was the case. So God, in his divine wisdom, when he formulated the Torah, he created an institution of halacha so that the nation should be able to survive and keep the system, and the system should be ongoing. But when it comes to philosophy, when it comes to an area of theory, there's no such psak, because a gadol cannot tell you what it is in reality. If it was, you couldn't have a machlekes tanayim. How could two tanayim argue? Each one knows what. You tell me, it will depend on who's a greater tzaddik. The greater tzaddik should be the right one. Never will you find a psak made any gemara that paskes like somebody because he's a greater tzaddik. Never heard of such a thing. There is no such thing. So you see that in yadus, we do not follow the halacha because it is right. We follow the halacha because it is right to follow the halachic system, and this is what the system dictates. If that's the case, you can answer the question yourself. If the gun will tell you that politically that will see a certain situation a certain way, and he will tell you that it's dangerous to stay here, he thinks it's dangerous here, or he thinks it's not dangerous here, are you obligated to go by what he says? Well, this depends on how you understand your gadol. How do you understand the idea that you have to follow the gadol? If you think the idea is that they are infallible, then of course you'd be over a lav metaraisa if you wouldn't listen to them, because if you jeopardize your life, you're over a lot of things. So then you'd have to follow them. But as long as we say that a gadol does not have any way of divining what the truth is in reality, but it's merely a system, a halachic system, so then what the gadol says in a political area, there's no psak on that. There is no psak on that. Yes. The whole system, I just mentioned it briefly. The way the system works is that when you have a psak, like Donnie mentioned, when there is a bezna gadol, then of course there's no question that it's psak. Until Stimas HaTalmud, there is psak. Hazal HaTzmicha, they were able to pass it. With the Hilchasa, the Al Kagan. So it's the Al Kagan, that's the Chazal Paskin, that's it. There's no, you can't argue on the Psak of Chazal, because that's Mesmachim. But of course, we do not have any Mesmachim, because the Smicha was lost. So after that, there is no Psak anymore. What does a person do in the absence of Psak? Person has to follow, there's only one requirement, he must follow a rational, consistent path. That is all he can do, and that's all we have this mindset. That's why you have a situation where, that's why we have the Shulchan Aruch. What is the Shulchan Aruch? The Shulchan Aruch is where you have Gedolei Yisrael who've analyzed the sugyas, and they see many, many Rishonim this way, that way, you don't know what to do. So they, generally speaking, they follow the consensus of opinion on the matter, even though it's not a real psak, but it's the intelligent approach. However, if somebody would be able to show that even all the Rishonim have made a mistake, clear cut error in the Rishonim, someone would be able to show that he can override all the Rishonim, he could do a whole new thing today, because there's no psak. There is no psak. However, in the absence of such a phenomena, you must follow a rational view. The only rational view is to follow the consensus of opinion of the people who have the knowledge in the subject, just like you would do in medicine or in any other field. You have to be consistent. But you can't just jump around from place to place. Like you can't follow the gra here and this one there. That's what Moshe mentioned is a sefer. If you're a grunik, means you follow the gra consistently, you have a right to do that, because I have a right to say the gra, I believe the gra is the greatest mind in the last 7 centuries, and therefore whatever he says I follow. That's rational, there's a basis to say you can't say it. And a person has a right to do that. But it can't be inconsistent, it can't be crazy jumping from here to there. So as long as he has in the absence of a real psak, what is necessary in halacha is a consistent logical approach. And that's what we have this man as at. And we don't have any real psak anymore. Yes. A person has a right to say, my rav. What's the idea of a rav? If you have a rav, the person has the right to say, I have faith in my rav. This is our Mari, the Asher, we respect him, and we go by what he says. Let him decide whether he's going to follow, go like Rav Moshe, go like the Chafetz Chaim, or go like Rav Soloveitchik. I rely on him. A person has the right to do that. That's a consistent approach. But a person that is consistent. But a person can't just go into our loving world and just scoop out what he wants and just do what he wants. I mean, that's not consistent. It's inconsistent. You can't be inconsistent. Inconsistent has to be a logical approach. Yes. There is a very strong emotional need for people to believe, especially in religion, that everything they do, this is the truth. And every other religion does have that, except us. We don't have such a thing. Because in Yahadis, you have to be on a level where you can distinguish between what is reality and what is a halachic system. And it shouldn't, your commitment to the halachic system shouldn't be any less because of the fact that it's not the absolute truth. That's a person that's has emotional insecurity, is looking for some type of stability through thinking that everything he does is the ultimate reality. Yeah, this demands a more mature level, a more mature mind. Unfortunately, you're right. I mean, the average person who doesn't know this, it's good he should follow even blindly. I mean, hopefully, if he follows blindly, he'll take the advice of the Chum, they should learn. And once he starts learning, he'll start opening up his eyes. But basically, until that time, it's not good to shake people up with this type of information. You have to, I mean, they find their work on their level. But you who have been fortunate enough to come into the inner core of Yadis, the area of Talmud Torah, you have to realize you're working on a different level. What Rich is mentioning is true, that the average person was not a political scientist, and therefore it was rational for him to follow what the Gadol says, because the Gadol has more information and the Gadol has a better mind. That's true. But man is still not infallible. But it was the correct decision. You're right. I would say absolutely right. I am not trying to imply that the people who followed the Gedolim did the wrong thing. But it doesn't necessarily mean that if you do the right thing that you're always going to be successful. You do the right thing and unfortunately it could spell out a person's doom. It's possible. But the only thing we could say about the right thing is that on the whole, if a person does the most intelligent thing, on the whole, he will be better off. But you can't say in any particular situation what's going to happen. But obviously, this was all hashgacha from God, and nothing could be done to avoid it. But the question was raised as to whether I, as an individual, if I have other information, or if I could see myself, if I understand it differently, do I have to follow up and go? The answer is no. But I think what Rich pointed out is an important thing. That there should be no condemnation of Klal Yisrael because they followed the Golem. That was the right thing to do. It was wrong. They had no better way to go, and this was all a matter of Hashgachas Hashem, God's Hashgacha, and unfortunately that's the way, I mean, it turned out, unfortunately, that the Klal Yisrael was in such a situation that that was their fate. The only thing we do find in Tanakh, just to show you, that the only thing we do find with regard to ascertaining reality, we do find that there was something that was used with regard to ascertaining reality, and that was, of course, the Urim V'Tumim. So you see, there was no psak with regard to that. The Urim V'Tumim was a form of nevuah, which at that time the Klal Yisrael was zochet to have in its midst, to have an Urim V'Tumim in its midst, to give them nevuah. But that only a Navi could do. The only instrument of ascertaining reality is not halacha, but it's the area of nevuah. That's the only instrument. That's why it says when they would lose something or they didn't know, so they go and ask the Navi. The Navi was able to know certain things that an average person couldn't have any knowledge of. So that's the area of nevuah. But the area of nevuah is totally distinct from the area of halacha. As a matter of fact, as you know, if you use nevuah, you cannot use it in halacha. Halacha has nothing to do with nevuah. Nevuah is a different area. It's a different instrument. It's relegated to a different realm. It's in a totally different realm. Two different things. Yes. Rational to select the Vilna, but it's not rational to select the Rambam. The reason is because the Rambam you can't select because you have other Rishonim, Rabbi Natan, Mari, Rashi, Gonim. You can't. Why are you selecting the Rambam? And you can't be attracted to his biography. So the reason is just an irrational reason. So it's no good. But the Vilna Goyen is rational because the Vilna Goyen lived after the Rishonim, and I could say that he had the benefit of seeing all the different views, and he being as great as a Rishon would be able to come to the best final decision. That's why it's rational to say the Vamidvayim. Whereas it's not rational to say a certain Rishon. You would have to, if you'd assume that position, you'd have to say that after the Vamidvayim there was no one that approached his level that could do, could evaluate the material as well as him. And it's quite possible to say that. It is a rational position. In terms of perfection, it doesn't really matter which way you do the halacha. It's not important in terms of perfection which way a person does the halacha. The important thing in the action of halacha is that it should be that the system of halacha should continue to exist. It doesn't matter which way it puts on tefillin. It doesn't make any difference in terms of perfection. The only thing, and what makes a difference, is that the system should exist. That's what makes the difference. But the existence of the system demands, of course, and brings about a great rational rational surge in the person's life. Because once he has to do the halacha, he has to check the halacha. He checks the halacha, he sees machlokas. He goes into the svar, he goes into all the ideas. So the important thing is that the system should exist to raise him to a higher level. Understand? The Gra happens to be an unusual phenomenon because he was on the level of a Rishon and lived there in the time of the Echronim. He happens to be an unusual phenomenon. So the Gra is different. The Gra happens to be an unusual phenomenon. I mean, there's nobody like that.
It still wasn't infallible.
It means that they're both part of Torah. Because Torah is whatever is a rational possibility is Torah. But Havmin of a Gemara is Torah too, even though the Havmin is refuted. Rational possibility is a part of the system of Torah. Okay? It means even though it may in fact be wrong, but in terms of theory they both approach reality. Okay? It's not an inferior level intellectually. Either one. Elu velo divrei Elokim chayim means one is right and one is wrong. But in terms, you see, you have to understand something. You have to understand that man never really knows what is right. I spoke about this before. Because, like, for instance, you have different scientists, right? So now we see Newton's theory has been overridden by Einstein's theory. Newton's theory doesn't apply anymore. So, I mean, it applies factually, but it doesn't really explain reality. So you'll say that Newton was wrong. Yeah, he was wrong. But to say that Newton didn't have more knowledge of physics than the man in the street is absurd, you say. So, and to say that our theory now is the absolute correct theory is also absurd. Because the human mind approaches reality. It approaches it. And what it means is Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim means that they're both in the realm of approaching reality. You mentioned last time the fact we were discussing the Ashgacha, and certain questions came up. All right. So we mentioned last time. We said that talking about the Chazal, it says that a person is makabel upon himself the old Torah, the yoke of Torah. They remove from him the yoke of the Malchus, of the government, and the yoke of Derech Eretz. The yoke of Malchus means the external things, the external burdens. That's what it really represents. The Malchus was the most prevalent external burden in the time of Chazal. So they would take a labor tax and they would impose a great inconvenience on people's lives. That's the Malchus. And the second thing is, it says, Ol Derech Eretz. Ol Derech Eretz means simply the day-to-day burdens that a person has. Different burdens that a person has. So Chazal say that if a person involves himself in Torah, so these other two areas are totally removed from him. And it works, we explained it to mean both ways. One way, and it is in terms of God, first of all, the way the Rambam says, Yatzileu Hashem Yisbarach, V'yekel Me'olav Torah Hazman. God will save him from the Torah Hazman. And the Rabbeinu Yonah also mentions, of course, that it's Hashgacha, but it's not just Hashgacha. It really is also a psychological phenomenon, or philosophical phenomenon, which means to say that a person who raises himself to the level where he is involved, where his main involvement is Torah, is the world of ideas, so the other areas become insignificant to him, and he doesn't look at it in the same manner. He doesn't look at it in the same manner, because he's on a level where these things really are unimportant to him. So he is removed from the old of Derech Eretz, whereas everybody is preoccupied with all the details of their particular details of their life, the financial details and the materialistic details. This person is not involved in that. So the old Derech Eretz is removed. But besides the fact that he himself removed this old Derech Eretz from his life, the Ashgacha continues to remove it even further. So he shouldn't be bothered. And this, we said, is the Rambam Shita, which the Rambam Shita is that divine providence is not a miracle. It's not a miracle, but it's a natural phenomenon. And the Rambam says the end of here, Hilchos Shemitah V'Yovel, a person that's on the level. I mean, we're talking about a person on a high level. I'm talking about an average person. And a person can't, you know, even though we ourselves may not be on that level, but we should nevertheless not be prevented from appreciating that level. We have to study perfection. So a person is on a tremendous level, the Rambam says, that God takes care of him, and he has a easy parnasa that he could do whatever is necessary, and he could be involved in thought and in Torah. That's what Rambam says. A person is a very high level. So we said that the Ashgacha works in line, parallels the person, human activity. That's the way it works. A person who lives in line with certain ideas, so the Ashgacha complements his way of life. And if his way of life is such that he removed himself mentally from the world of the physical preoccupation, materialistic preoccupation, so then God removes him further from the world of materialistic preoccupation. Now, I mentioned, I said that it's not a nace. It's not considered a nace. The question was raised, I think David Ossi asked the question, why is it considered a nace? Because it's an interference with the law of nature, so this also should be considered a nace. And I said, no, it's not considered a nace, because you see, nisim, Chazal talk about nisim like the nisim in Yam Suf and the various nisim, and they mention that these things were occurred only because Bein HaShemashos, at the last moment before the creation was set, so at the last moment certain exceptions were left to exist in order that these things should not be aberrations of the law of nature. The Rambam has a different approach. That's the approach of Chazal, basic approach. So the that being the case, how could we say that this is true, that an Ashgacha works? You'd have to say that it was Muchan Misheshes Mebreshes. They said no, that is not considered an ace. It's not considered an ace. Why? Because I said as follows. That there really, in Yadis, we maintain there are two worlds. There's the world of ideas, the world of Chachma, and then there is the physical world. And we said that one of the principles of Yadis is that the world of ideas governs the physical world. I'm putting it in certain terms, but it's the only way I think that we could express it. That the world of ideas governs the physical world. And at the source of the world of ideas, the very source of the world of ideas is God. What we understand is God. Okay? Now, that being the case, when an individual, man is the only one that we know of, the only creature that can actually partake of this world of ideas, partake of the world of Chachma, when he partakes of the world of Chachma, he becomes closer to the source of all of reality, which is God. In doing that, in becoming closer to the source of reality, you see, he naturally becomes closer to the world of ideas. In becoming closer to the world of ideas, he is under the influence of the world of ideas to a greater degree, and therefore the materialistic world simply cannot approach him. It's very... It's a metaphysical thing, but I think that there is something that can be gleaned from the description. I mean, the Rambam does give him more of a description, perhaps, maybe less in certain respects, but I think there's benefit in describing it. What it means is that the moment the person is involved in the world of ideas, he approaches God. Approaches God means that he's under the sway of the world of ideas, which is more primary, more real, you see, than the physical world. Since the world of ideas governs the physical, once he's in that realm, the physical simply has no way of approaching him in his life. You see, it affects his life just as much as it affects his intellect. Just like intellectually and mentally he's approaching reality, it causes him as a being to be removed from the effects of reality. When the effects of the other world, you see. He's subject to the effects of the world of ideas rather than to the effects of the world, the physical world. Okay, I can't describe it too much further.
Does the same thing that happened to him is happening?
In other words, like this, he's living in line with the world of ideas. He's living in line with the world of Chochmah. Causes that the life which is etched out for him is one which is appropriate to that lifestyle. And therefore, he avoids the ill effects of the materialistic world. Okay? That is the principle of Hashgacha. That's the basic principle of Hashgacha. This idea is totally different. I want you to know, it is totally different from the idea of an ace. It has nothing to do with an ace. It's not an ace. It is absolutely not an ace. It's part of the constant Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Bnei Adam. It's part of the relationship between God and man. It has to do very much with the fact that man can uncover God's Chachma to a certain extent. But man can uncover God's Chachma, and in uncovering that Chachma, he's drawn into a different situation. Being drawn into that situation causes his life to be outside of the realm of just physical chance, because he's now under the Hashgacha. You understand? He's now being under the Hashgacha, being close to God, the source of reality, causes him to be removed from the world of material chance. That's the best way I can describe it. You understand? The best way, obviously, to understand it, you have to be Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, that's the Gilul Midos. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to understand. To have a knowledge of the science of Hashgacha. Have a knowledge of that science, a person can only hope that as he progresses, he will have a greater and greater knowledge of that area. But you realize you're dealing with the knowledge of God, and even in physics, you see how much trouble we have uncovering the most basic ideas that God has implanted in nature. I mean, you're talking about man has been here for thousands of years. Great minds, Archimedes, Aristotle, the greatest minds that we've ever had have been involved in trying to uncover reality, and you find out that for 2,000 years the basic idea of time and space was completely incorrect. So you see that just to uncover the most basic ideas in the universe requires superhuman intellect. Superhuman intellect, which we are incapable. So we certainly are incapable in terms of understanding how the Hashgacha works. I mean, it's nice to ask questions, but you have to understand that it's a realm which is beyond our ken, way beyond our ken. Because here you're trying to deal directly with God. You don't even have the physical world to go by. But this is basically what I'm giving you is basically a description of what the Mesorah tells us about Hashgacha. That the closer a person is to the source of reality, and the source of reality governs the material, since he is in a closer proximity to the source of reality, he's directly under that source, and he avoids the materialistic after effects, which is further removed from the world of ideas. That's the best description I can give. Changed in a different sense, though. Not changed in the sense of an interruption. You see, changed in the sense because it's a natural phenomenon that the world of ideas stands higher than the other world. The reason why the physical world cannot affect him is not because the physical world is directly changed, but because he's in a situation where simply the physical cannot affect him. It's a different concept. In other words, and that's what I want to point out, that in Yadus there are two concepts. There's a concept in which a person is It would seem on the surface to be the same phenomenon. The physical world doesn't affect an individual. But there's two reasons why the physical world doesn't affect an individual. One reason why the physical world doesn't affect him is because he is in a different world, you see, and the physical simply cannot affect him, is incapable of affecting him. Another way, a different way, is where it's not because he's in a different world, but there is a direct intervention in the physical. Okay? There's a direct intervention in the physical. It's two different concepts. Two totally different concepts. Yes. And the Lashon Ma'avirin is given in human terms. Because it looks, the appearance is that they take it away from him. And that's the plain Lashon. I mean, there's no reason to have a more abstract Lashon. It would just confuse people. But the concept behind it is not to be understood that way. Doesn't mean that that God jumps down and simply stops. So that would be an ace. What it means is that he is in a different type of life. He's in a different type of life situation. How he avoids the effects, that is a whole science. I mean, I can't explain how he avoids the effects. I can only say that there's been no breach in the law of nature. That's it. He avoids the effects like the Rambam says. The Rambam says the man was scheduled to go on a flight, and for some reason he didn't take the flight. But not because a miracle where there was an intervention in the laws of nature. It's a different phenomenon. It works differently. That's why it's not considered an ace. Hashgacha is not to be confused with an ace. It's a basic error. People might be confused too. It's a different type of thing altogether. Any person who has a knowledge, who has a sincere knowledge of God's creation, and who appreciates God's chachma, has a sincere appreciation of God's chachma, and recognizes the existence of God from the universe, shows that his soul is in a certain state where he's able to think objectively about reality. See, the person that denies God is not the pshat that he's doing a bad thing in denying God. It means his soul is not in a certain state. Yadus maintains that there's a tzelem alokim, which means a natural state where a person, if he would just be objective about it, would have to conclude from the study of the universe that there is a source to this. That would be his natural conclusion. So any person, a person like Albert Einstein, would be considered an individual that is on a level where he was capable of coming to such a conclusion, and he certainly was a person that appreciates God's chachma. How much hashgacha would apply to him? I mean, it's difficult. I mean, these things we don't know, but it's possible to say. I mean, a person can't determine. Of course, he didn't have the knowledge of the hashgacha, I mean, which is a bad thing. I mean, which is a lack. There certainly is a lack. He didn't have the knowledge of the hashgacha. But the knowledge of the hashgacha, as I mentioned, is not just a matter of a particular point. Anything that has to do with knowledge of God means that your idea of God is different. And a person who does not have the knowledge of the hashgacha does not have the same idea of God as a person who does have the knowledge of the hashgacha. And I told you how that worked once before. Because a person who has the knowledge of the hashgacha has to feel more removed from God than a person who doesn't. A person who doesn't have knowledge of hashgacha sees God in the universe as that's God. All he sees is that whatever he sees is it gives him a certain idea about God, a certain sense, as the source of scientific knowledge. But a person who sees God as a source of scientific knowledge and also as a source of hashgacha has to feel more removed from God. He is a step away. He recognizes a greater gap. There's a greater gap, a greater distance. And in that gap, he has more negative knowledge, as the Rambam says. And negative knowledge is the whole essence of our knowledge of God. So a person who has less negative knowledge of God is less of a chacham than a person who has more. And a person, the Balei HaMasora, who had knowledge of God's hashgacha, were more removed from God. They felt a greater distance between them and God. Because it becomes more unintelligible. And the more unintelligible, it's kilo machshava seichem and machshava seichem, kigavu shamayim me'aretz, and a person has a different sense. His soul has a different sense about the source of the universe. It's a different sense. That difference is important in estimating his knowledge of God and his proximity, so to speak, to God. How close he is to God, you see. Yes. That's why Chazal say that certain things, like Gemara says, a person is a ben olam haba if he says Ashrei three times a day. The Gemara says, why is a person a ben olam haba if he says Ashrei three times a day? Because it says, no sin lechem l'chol basar. right? So what does that mean? So what does it mean, Nasa Nachum Habasa? A simple thing. You think of all things in Asher, then why Nasa Nachum Habasa? The answer is, because Nasa Nachum Habasa means that he has a recognition of a whole system outside of himself. Outside of himself. If no sin lechem lechol basa means he recognizes there are other people and they're just as important as he is, and that there's a whole system of hashgacha here, and that God relates to them just like he does to himself. So in recognizing the no sin lechem lechol basa, he becomes, his life changes, and he comes in line with a certain reality. Coming in line with a certain reality means that he himself comes under that reality. So therefore he is zocha to partake of that reality. He wants to offer loss of mazonos, because it goes to the fact that it means that a person who, that's the same idea of the Ashgacha, a person who understands, who recognizes the idea of nos and lechem chabasa, he himself will never suffer, because he, what it means is that the person, once he partakes of the ideas through his mind, so that's how the Ashgacha works. He partakes of the ideas in reality. In reality, those ideas apply to him, attain to him. The reality is switched. The reality is changed. I'm just saying as a metaphor. But he partaking of the ideas on an intellectual way, you see. I don't mean, when I say intellectual is a big word, because intellectual just means a cold logic. But there's more to it than that. There's more to it. It means his mind, his soul, his emotions. There's a unity of a person. It's not just the, you can't separate there's a totality that we're talking about. It means that his whole essence follows. Intellectually, it's very cold. You can be intellectual when it comes to mathematics. They can't be intellectual when it comes to life, because it means his whole essence has to be there. See? So a person who his essence partakes of that idea, Hashgacha treats him as such, and in the actuality, it becomes realized in his life. He becomes realized in his life.
We done it?
I'm trying to unravel here what Yadus is telling us. The system of Yadus, you have to have patience with it. You can't just say, if I can't, you know what the Rambam says in the Mara, somebody will say that I want to understand what a Malach is, I want to understand the metaphysics, I want to understand what the Bir Shemayim Varetz, the Maisa Matav, Maisa Bracious. Yeah, sure you want to understand. And when you start telling them how long and how difficult it would be, so they turn around and walk away. You have to have patience with in uncovering. We're dealing with an area which was an area that Moshe Rabbeinu was mispoil for, that he should have the knowledge of. You're talking about the Borei Olam, I'm not talking about a simple thing over here. But what I am saying is that nevertheless, even though we're talking about an area that inherently we cannot really understand, but I say that we should be able to have as much as we can define in the area is a gain. Whatever we can define in the area is a gain. So I'm just trying to put together what we do know about it, as little as it may be. But the process, of course, we're totally ignorant of. That's why Rabbeinu Yonah speaks of effects. Mavir, they speak of effects, because there's no way to talk about the process. Unless you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't talk about the process. Any other questions? One stems from the Gavra. The difference is basically that one stems from the Gavra. The Gavra has raised himself into a different world where he's immune. It's like an immunity system where he becomes immune to certain effects. Whereas the other case, there is no immunity, but it's direct intervention in the laws of nature. That's an ace. And these two categories exist in Yadus. Why? And why a particular event should be relegated to one category rather than another? I think that question presupposes that we know the difference in mechanisms and how it works. But I'm just trying to lay down for you what Yadus maintains. That it's two separate processes is clear from Chazal and from Amasara. Because you see from the Rambam and from the Mishnayos and from everything we have. And what I want to show you is that not just do we see it from Chazal, but we see it from a Pasuk. That's what I want to show you. Now you see it from Pesukim. It goes back to Pesukim. See, what we're saying basically is that the physical world is structured in a certain way. In a way that it is, it's structured in a way that a certain situation can arise in an individual which will remove him from the effects of certain physical phenomena, of his being subjected to the physical phenomena. That's one thing. That's a natural law implanted in nature, that Chochmah is higher than the physical. That's part of a law, that Chochmah is higher than the physical. Okay? There's another something else is that the physical world is subject to God's intervention. That's a different thing. Okay? Now, can we tell which is which? The Rambam says yes, in certain cases. The Rambam says that any change in a property of a physical object is considered an ace. That's what the Rambam says.
If you
must have some idea of an answer, I say that the best thing is that you should tolerate the difficulty. But if you must have some idea of an answer, if you must have some idea of an answer, you could put it this way. You could say that the soul of an individual who is on a higher level is in a closer relationship to God. And therefore, since that is so, he didn't get on the plane. I'm putting it very, and I have to put it in a very cautious way, because you're dealing with something, as I said before, we don't know too much about. But I would say, this much I would say, that since the soul of the man who is involved in the world of ideas is closer to God, he did not get on the plane that crashed. Okay? Beyond that, I can't say, it's not a breach in the law of nations. I'm not saying necessarily that's the only way. I'm just saying if you have to have... Alright? There's a Ramban, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's a Ramban that says that the Ashgacha works through the... through psychological causality. But since man has Bechira, it comes out that psychological causality is not necessarily a disruption in the law of nature. In other words, that if the person, the king will get a certain idea at a certain time, the king gets an idea at a certain time to protect somebody or to help somebody, would not be a breach in the law of nature. I think it's Rambam, but I mean, it's nice, but the... how it works, we just don't know. I mean, how it works, we don't know. But I'm just trying to ascertain what Yahadus' ideas are concerning this matter. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Ramban says that. There's a Ramban that says that the Hashgacha works through the heart of man, which means that the person is supposed to be saved from a certain situation, like the old Malchus. So the way it works is that the Melech gets an idea, gets a favor, for either he has an oversight or whatever it is. But it works... You're like...
I don't think it's important in terms of our knowledge of what's going to happen. We have to be able to tolerate a little bit of it here. You understand? It'd be nice to understand the you're doing this. Yes.
Nice. All right, Moshe Ben, I waited a long time for it. Now, let's just go. Let me just show you where I have a riot from the pocket. Okay. The first time you find that there's an interesting pasuk in the Torah by the Bris Ben Absalom. The Bris Ben Absalom, okay? So it says Avraham Avinu had a vision, and God appeared to him, and he said that Lo Yirash Vazeh Ki Ima Sheyetzin Amecha Hu Yirashecha. And it says that God took him outside, and he told him to count the stars, and he said, Ko Yirashecha. When he didn't have any children at all at the time. So the pasuk is Vehemin Bar Hashem Vayachshevel Lo Tzedakah. It's in Bereshis Tezvav Vav. Vehemin Bar Hashem Vayachshevel Lo Tzedakah. So what does it mean Vehemin Bar Hashem? So Vehemin Bar Hashem means, and what does it mean Vayachshevel Lo Tzedakah? So Rashi explains, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rashi says, God God considered it a schus. So God considered a good deed on Avram's part that Avram believed in. So the Ramban asks a very powerful kasha here. He says, how could you say such a thing? You're talking about Avram Avinu. After all, if he doesn't have belief, who will? You're not talking about a plain person, talking about a Navi? It's a great thing that the Navi believes in God? What kind of a thing is this? Right? So, I want you to answer the question. What Rashi means. You see, until now, Avraham Avinu had an understanding of God, and he had an understanding of Schav Onesh. Schav Onesh. But Schav Onesh is Ashgacha. And Ashgacha is not different than the natural law. We don't understand it as well as the natural law, but it is a natural process. And it's based upon the fact that in nature, in the universe, that the ideas are the essence, are the essential realities. It's based on that idea. It's a parallel to that idea. That's the most I can tell you about. Just like the ideas are the essence of the physical world, so too when man partakes of the ideas, he gets into the inner area. Now, what it means like this, that when God told him, by the Bris Bein Absorim, Ko Yizarecha, you see, and that there will be a change in the law of nature, and Avraham Avinu recognized that there will be a change in the law of nature, because of the establishment of the Ummah Yisraelis, in order to establish the Jewish nation, this was something that was alien to Avraham. Because if you remember, the whole history of Avraham Avinu was that he was the one that uncovered God from the natural law, if you study the Rambam. So you see, he was the one that brought to the world the idea that the person should not follow his emotional projections and his superstitions and his primitive nature, but there's a world of reality. And behind the world of reality is a Borei Olam. That was the idea that Avraham established. And Avraham even understood the Ashgacha. But he didn't understand this. This was something he never understood. That there should be a breach, that God, who is the Borei Olam, the source of the natural law, the source of the universe, should make a breach in the law in order to establish a Jewish nation? This he didn't understand. And when he heard that, when he received that idea in Nevuah, he was taken aback. But Vehemin Barashem, what does it mean? It means not understanding it. He recognized, knowing the idea that our knowledge of God is only a negative knowledge, you see, there was total acceptance of that idea. And at that moment, of course, Avraham Avinu had to draw back one step further from his idea of God, his proximity to the idea of God than he had been before. And that's why it says, V'hem in Bar Hashem. He accepted the idea, and he moved back one step further. That's the pshat in the pasuk. So you see that there's an idea stepping backwards and closer. The greater, that's why the greatest knowledge, the greater a person is, the more knowledge of God he has, the greater an honor of him. Because he's moved back further. It's regress in order to have progress. The regress is the progress. Now, what did God establish at the Bris Bein Absorim that Avraham didn't know about before was one thing, that there's an aspect of God. When I say an aspect of God, of course, you understand it. It's almost anthropomorphic, but it's the only way that we can understand it. Is that God doesn't have any aspects. God is one, but to us it appears as aspects. So what it says, what the Pasuk established at that point was that there's a new aspect of God. What is the aspect of God? God betoras kores bris. Kores bris. That was the Bris Bein Absorim. That God is kores bris with man. And the bris means that there's an establishment of a covenant between God and man, and the laws of nature will be disrupted to maintain that covenant. That's the essence of Yadus. That's one of the essential points of Yadus. It's the essence of Yadus as a religion. I want to understand, that is the essence of Yadus as a religion. Understanding philosophically whatever happened until that point is the essence of understanding God on a philosophical plane. That was Avraham Avinu. He reached that point. But the essence of the establishment of Klal Yisrael is the idea that God is a Kores Bris. The same God that is the source of the universe, the same God that is the source of the Ashgacha, also is a Kores Bris. To Avraham Avinu it sounded strange and impossible to understand. Because Avraham Avinu understood God in terms of the universe, in terms of the natural law, and even in terms of the Ashgacha. But this he had no concept of. He accepted it. He said. But that's why you say in benching, if you don't have bris v'tara, you're not yotze. Bris aretz v'tara. Because you have to have it. Because Eretz Yisrael represents that. Eretz, the idea of Eretz Yisrael represents the concept of God, the Torah's coming with us. That this land is theirs no matter what. The Ashgacha will always make sure that the land is never removed from them. That they're always related to the land that's part of the Krisis Bris. It's part of the establishment of the Umay Yisraelis. It's God, the Torah's coming with us. That's why you must say, in benching, Bris, the physical is the physical Bris Mila. Bris Mila represents the idea of God, the Torah's coming Bris. And the Torah, the Torah is the essence of it. That Torah, that's the whole essence of Yadis and Eretz Yisrael. It's really the essence of the establishment of the nation is based upon God, the Torah's Torah. It was a different dimension that Avraham Avinu received at the Bris Ben Atzeret.
Rabbi Chalafta Ish Kfar Hananya Omer. Asara Sheyoshim Vaoskim Batara Shechina Shriya Beinayim. 10 people that are sitting and learning Torah, so the Shechina, the divine presence, is among them. Shenema Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kael. That God resides, God exists in the Eda. In the godly Eda. What is a godly Eda? So Rashi, the Rambam explains, okay. Now, so he says, so the Rambam says, because the Eda means 10. Okay. So therefore you know that 10 people, when it says, Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kael, that God is present, exists, and his existence is present, in the, so to speak, his divine presence exists in the Eda, godly Eda, so it means 10 people. Okay. Uminayin, of course, it means 10 people also guitar. Uminayin afila chamisha, how do you know even 5? That even if there are 5 people, that also God is there, his Shechina is there. Va'agudaso al eretz yisoda. It's a pasuk in Amos. So aguda means 5 fingers. It says habone bashamayim alosov, that he builds in the heavens his hierarchies, and agudaso al eretz yisoda, and his agudaso al eretz yisoda means agudaso means the people, Vagudaso al eretz yisoda, and he established the people on the land. So, what does it mean? Habona b'shamayim alosa vagudaso al eretz yisoda. It means that it's referring to the heavenly bodies, like the Mitzvah says. Yeah, that hubone b'shamayim alosav zelamayla mizev of ala galgalam yomar. It means all the cosmos. Shehem zelamayla mizev. It means that the heavenly bodies, the way they work, it's in systems of hierarchies. There's different, there's the planetary system, and then there's the various systems that exist in the astronomical systems. V'agudaso kvutzas briyosav yisod al oretz. And on the ground, he established the people, brios, man. So Chazal said agudaso means 5, because it comes to the word aguda. 5, it reflects the idea of 5 people. So what does it mean? What's the analogy? In the heaven, he builds it. In the heavens, he builds the heavenly bodies, and on the land, he established the people. So what does it mean? It means to say. That the it means to, but you're right. But it means that there's two phenomena here. One is the actual phenomena of God's chachma, that's habona b'shamayim aloso. But then he created individuals, people, on the land. He established people on the land that are related, that can perceive this whole system of Chachma. You see? That's what it means. In other words, God created the world with Chachma, and he established people on the land that can perceive this Chachma. So, and Agudaso, the Gemara says, Chazal say the word Aguda has intimates five. It has a connotation of five. So why did why did he use the word Aguda with regard to people? To show that when five people understand the Chachma Elokim, that you see the Pasuk is trying to show you the fact that God's creation, the way God's creation works, he created the Chachma, and then he created on the land these people that are related to that Chachma. And it used the people that are related, that's the purpose of the people. So he used the noun Aguda to convey the idea that when there are five, that this phenomena takes place. In other words, the phenomena that God created was he created Chachma and those who can perceive this Chachma, which means that their purpose. So when they perceive this Chachma, they relate to God. They relate to God via the Chachma. The Brios relate to God via the Chachma. So there's Chachma, and there's the perception of the Chachma. So like Berachas Chaim, Shekol Bar L'Chvado, and Asher Yotzer Asadam Betzalmo, V'Hiskim L'Menu B'Nyadiyah. That means, why does that Berachah follow? The Yotzer Adam, Asher Yotzer Asadam Betzalmo. Because there's a relationship between the Chachma Hashem, and between God created the Chachma, and then he created those that can perceive the Chachma. That's how they relate to God. They relate to God via the Chachma that he created. So there's an interrelationship between the Brios and between the Chachma. This earth is related to the Chachma Hashem because of those Brios that perceive the Chachma. That's in line with the Rambam really in the Mara. The Rambam says that on this earth everything was created for man. On this earth everything was created for man. In the universe, you cannot say that the whole universe was created for man, the Rambam says. Because the universe has its own, it's an expression of the Chachma Hashem. And therefore it could have its own purpose. We can't be that egocentric to say that the entire universe was created for man. But on this planet, everything was created for man. If I'm not mistaken, the Rambam does say in the Mara that everything in the planet was created for man. So you see that God's creation is, in terms of Chachma, is twofold. First there's the Chachma per se, and then on this earth, what is the purpose of this earth? Perception of that Chachma. Perception of that Chachma. So all the Brios on this earth, from the smallest, like Chazal said, from the smallest gnat, is really created for the purpose of man. If we had Chachma, we'd understand why it's necessary to have all these different Brios in order that man should emerge, in order to have man. But the purpose of this earth is the perception of God. The purpose of this planet is perception of God's Chachma. So really, the expression of God is twofold. It's in his Chachma, and in those that perceive his Chachma, that's man. That's the combination. Man is the perceiver of the Chachma Hashem. And he uses the noun Aguda to indicate that when is this fulfilled? When is the purpose of man fulfilled? When you have five. You have five? Okay. That's the pasuk. Now, uminayin afilu shlosha. How do you know even three? Even if three people on Torah, it still is the shmina. Shenema bekerev elokim yishpot. So the pasuk says that now mishpat justice requires a bezin. A bezin is how many?
Three.
Is three. That's what the Rambam says. That the Bezn lo yi pachas megimel. Okay? So therefore, you see, the Kerhol Akim Yishpot indicates that when man is involved in, when a Bezn sits down to Paskin Ashayla, to decide, to give a hachras a din, to decide what the din is, so this is an act in which the divine presence, the man partakes of the divine presence in that moment. And that's how many? That's three. Okay?
Yeah.
Yishpot is Masa Matan. Without Masa Matan, you have no Bezin. Matter of fact, why is Bezin three? Why isn't Bezin four or two? It must be an uneven number. Because it has to be a Charas Adin. Charas Adin means that each person has to give his opinion, and then you have to paskin according to the book. But Bezin isn't just, Bezin doesn't paskin. Bezin, the essence of Bezin, the main thing is the Masa Matan, going through pros and cons of what the halacha is. Okay? So that's, so when man is involved in the halachic decision-making process, it's a part of the Shekhinah is there, the divine presence is there, exists, is he partakes of the divine presence at that moment. Next, Uminayin Achil Shnayim, how do you know even if two people learn Torah that the divine presence is there? Because it says, Oz Nidbru Yiri Hashem Yishariyehu. At that moment, those who feared God were speaking, conversing with each other. Vayakshev Hashem Vayishma. And God listened, God, so to speak, bent his ear and listened. Okay, so you see that that means that, that man is relating to God at that moment, even two. Uminayin Afilo Echad. How do you know even if one person learns Torah that the divine presence is there? Shenema b'chol moko masher askir es shemi ovo elecho verachticha. So Rashi says, kloma she'etein das belibcho lahaskir es shemi ovo shom elecho tahinu yochid. In other words, the pasuk says, b'chol moko masher askir es shemi ovo elecho verachticha. What does it mean? Every place where I will mention my name. What does it mean, I will mention my name? That God will mention his name? What kind of a phenomenon is that? What kind of phenomenon is that? How does God mention his name? So what's the answer? The answer is God mentions his name through people. When people, the name of God implies knowledge of God. Knowledge of God is the whole Chachmas HaTorah. So where does, how does God mention his name? God mentions his name when a person learns Torah. When a person learns Torah, it means mentioning his name is not just a name. A name is, the name means the idea of God's knowledge. That's the whole idea of Shem Hashem. That's the whole idea. We spoke about this with Shem Hashem. So wherever God mentions his name, how does God mention his name? He mentions his name through the people that learn. He's the cause of the people that learn Torah. So he's the ultimate cause. So since he's the ultimate cause of people learning Torah, wherever people learn Torah, God is mentioning his name. So it says, B'chol mako masher askeh shemi, wherever my name is mentioned. That means even one person, no matter who. Okay? Rashi in the Chumash says that what does it mean? And it's referring to the Beis HaMikdash. It's referring to, that's halacha. It's halacha. Asher askir es shemi, of course, the same shah. Askir shemi doesn't mean that God will mention his name. We don't have such a thing that God mentions his name. Who mentions God's name? Man. Adam. Man mentions God's name. But the only thing is, why is it called askir es shemi? Because God is the ultimate cause of being maskir his shame, because he created man, he's melame Torah l'amo Yisrael. So therefore, wherever they're maskir the shame Hashem, it's, we have to attribute it, ultimately we have to attribute the askaras Hashem to God. So that's what it means. B'chol makom it's the claim shot in the pasuk, sha'askir es shemi. That's what it means, that's no other meaning. Now Rashi says over here that it tells you halacha, that the only place you could say shame Hashem is in the Mikdash. That's where the Kahanim are allowed to say the mention God's name. Nesias Kapayim, Levar Chasam. But otherwise you have no right to mention God's name. Why is that so? Why is that so? Why is it that only in the Mikdash you can mention God's name only there? Why can't you mention it Chutz LeMikdash? Says Shalonit Rishus Lahaskashem on the Farash Elabamakam Shashkina Ba'asham. That's the only place you can mention the Shema Farash is in the place where the Shekhinah comes, where the Shekhinah resides. And you know the Gemara says that there are many Nisim that occurred in the first base of Migdash to demonstrate the Hashras Hashkina. That's Hashras Hashkina. So what is the but really, you see, it's not a Tata Sasri. This Rashi and the other Rashi is not a Tata Sasri. Because you have the halachic, one is a halachic formulation, and one is the philosophical phenomenon. See, the halachic formulation is with regard to Mikdash, a certain form that the halacha takes. But the halachic form always reflects certain concepts. Now, what is the halachic form is that you're only allowed to mention God's name in a place where God actually causes his Shekhinah to reside, and that's the place of the Mikdash. That's where the Shekhinah resides. That's the pasuk. Also, the Mikdash Shachanti b'Salma. So, what does that mean? It reflects one idea. You see, the Rambam, it's an idea that we mentioned once, that the Rambam mentions in the Mara, that human, what is really human knowledge? Human knowledge is not man thinking as an active process, that man thinks out ideas. Man doesn't think out ideas. The way man gets true ideas is that he places himself, so to speak, in a position where he's under the influence of God, which means that the source of all knowledge really is from God. When man is perfected to a certain degree, the influence from God, so to speak, reaches him. And he's on that wavelength where he's a recipient of the Chochmas Elokim. I think we mentioned that with regard to the Kruvim. That's the idea of the Kruvim. That's the idea of the Kruvim. It's a different type of epistemology that Yadis has. Went to that length last year, I think it was. Wasn't it? Yeah. The whole idea of the Kruvim with the Rambam. So it means that the Kruvim reflects the idea that man, when man understands something, it's not just an act of a mechanical act that he performs himself. He simply places himself in a certain, he places his soul in a certain attitude where it receives, it's a recipient of the influence from God. You see? Now, the only time that a person has the idea, the reason why the only place you can mention the Shem Hashem is, because Shem Hashem means the highest level of knowledge. The highest level of knowledge is when man is completely under that influence. That's the highest level. And only in that situation does he approach does he have a right to mention the Shem Hashem. In order for a person to understand the Shem Hashem of Yud Kei Vav Kei, to understand that idea that is expressed in the name of God, he has to be in a level where he's totally under the influence of God. Now that has a halachic representation. Where is that halachic representation? It's structured halachically into the system. And that's structured into the system of Mikdash. That the only time you can mention God's name is in the Mikdash. Why? Because that's where the Shekhinah is. What does it mean, Shekhinah? Shekhinah means that that he's under the influence of God's Hashgacha. That conveys the idea that the only time, the only level that a person could be on where he approaches God and where he can understand the idea of the Yud Kei Vav Kei, of the Shem Hashem, is when he's completely under the influence of the Shekhinah. That's the pasuk. That's why the pasuk says, B'chol makom asher az kiras shemei. Az kiras shemei means that God is the one that's mentioning the Shem Hashem. Why is God the one that's mentioning Shem Hashem? Not simply like we said before, because ultimately everything comes from God. It's more than that. What it means is that he's completely under the influence of God. So who is really the Mazkir of the Shem Hashem? Hashem, God. Why is God the Mazkir of Shem Hashem? Because it means when man is Mazkir the Shem Hashem, it's a result of his being totally under the influence of God. Since it's a result of his totally being under the influence of God, so who really mentioned the Shem Hashem? It's God. It's a beautiful pasuk. When you think about it, that's the real shot. B'chol makom asher azkir es shemei. How is God the maskir? If it's man, how is God the maskir? The answer is because when is man maskir? Only when he's totally under the influence of God. So if he's totally under the influence of God, who is the maskir really? God is the maskir. God is the maskir of Hashem Hashem. It's an interesting thing. But this philosophy of the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, where he explains the Kruvim, that's the idea of the Kruvim, really, it turns out, is a pasuk in the Torah. From the otherwise you don't understand what the pasuk means. What does it mean that God mentions Hashem Hashem? Man mentions Hashem Hashem. The answer is, how does man mention the Hashem Hashem? He's only permitted to mention it in the place of the Shekhinah, where he's under God's influence. So really, the whole essence of the mentioning of the whole essence of the emergence of the Shem Hashem from man is directly from God. Directly from God. The whole philosophy of the whole epistemology of Yadus is really in that one pasuk. Sha'asker Hashem. The Kohanim do not have to be great Talmidei Chachamim. Matter of fact, the Kohen Gadol is a kasher even if he's an Amoritz. Even if he's an ignoramus, the Kohen Gadol is kasher. Because that the Kohen Gadol, the kahunaship, is a halachic structure. Halachic structure doesn't mean that the Kohen has to understand the Shem Hashem. But the halachic structure reflects the metaphysical reality. The metaphysical reality of the individual has nothing to do. The metaphysical reality of man has nothing to do with the Kohen. You don't need a Kohen for it. The metaphysical reality is an internal perfection of man. He doesn't have to be a Kohen. He could be Yisrael. He could be...
The metaphysical reality.
Here. Instead of a the God switched it. And he said, Asker is a different... That's the whole system of halacha. That's God's law. God's system of halacha is to reflect the true reality. The ideas exist in the true reality. You see, the question is, why is it Asker Shemi? It's Tasker Shemi. Because man has Bechira. The answer is, the man has the Bechira insofar as placing his soul in that attitude. But once he does, he receives the influence from God. Okay? So that's why it's Asker Shemi. Okay? Now, the question is with regard to this Mishnah. What is this Mishnah telling us? That if 10 people are Osek in Torah, so the Shekhinah is Imoyam. If 5 people are Osek in Torah, Shekhinah is Imoyam. 3, Shekhinah Imoyam. 2, Shekhinah Imoyam. 1, Shekhinah Imoyam. So, of course, immediately, Kavachomer. 1, certainly 10.
Really?
What is the purpose of this? What's the purpose of the Chazal? What are they trying to say here? That's the difficulty in this mimer, in this statement. So you'll tell me that the purpose is it's different levels, and there's no doubt that it's true. There's no doubt that it's true. There's different levels. So there's 10, there's 5, there's 3, there's 2, there's 1. Fine. But why? So just to say that there's different levels, so the Chazal should have said that the more people you have Osek and Torah, the better it is. What is this? Psukim, what do you have to have these psukim for? The Kinnitz of Badaskel and the Lagudas of Eretz Yisrael. What do you need these psukim for? That's what we have to understand. What is it for? So each one's a different quality. So what? I mean, what do I learn from this? Uminayin, Afilu Shlosha, Uminayin. What is this Uminayin and psukim? What do you need this for? What is it trying to say? What are Chazal trying to tell us? What's the purpose of it? I think that in this I think, and moreover, what is it doing in Pirkei Avos? I mean, what is it? What's the purpose of here? To tell you an unknown phenomena? I think that in this Mishnah lies a very important idea, See, the question really is, I mean, we always speak about human happiness, and of course we say that the objective of the Torah is to give a person human happiness. I mean, the Torah mentions this that all the time. A person who follows the ways of the Torah will have a happy life. But you have to understand that a happy life, what does it mean to have that a person should have a happy life? You see? There are two different concepts over here. Now, when a person has a happy life, so what? So he has a happy life. So what does it mean? He has a happy life? Very nice. What does it mean? Is that basically all that there is to it? That he happens to have a happy life? He lives 70 happy years? Or is there something more behind that? You see, what is the essence of... And what is the nature of human happiness? What is the nature of human happiness? See, I think what this Mishnah does is it shows you an interesting thing with regard to the whole realm of Machshava insofar as human happiness is concerned.
Human happiness, really. Let me ask you a question. Is human happiness a psychological phenomenon or a metaphysical phenomenon? I think that's an important question. Is human happiness a metaphysical phenomenon or a psychological phenomenon? You mean what happened? Okay. Well, happiness means a person is living in accordance with the ways of the Torah. He's living in accordance with the ways of the Torah. He's learning Torah Lashma, and he's exceedingly happy. I want to know what that means. Is he involved? Is that phenomena? Is that a metaphysical phenomena, or is that a psychological phenomena? The answer is what Steve said. The Rambam explains in Chelek that the only type of experience that we could have is an emotional one. So that means we do not have, the Rambam says, we do not have any spiritual, any metaphysical, I hate to use the word spiritual, that's a different meaning, any metaphysical satisfaction in this world. That's ayin, that's kol him sabo lemos ha-mashiach, aval alam haba, ayin l'ras alakim z'lasach. And no one, we do not know what that experience is. So it comes out that when you look at the whole structure that God created in the universe, it comes out like this, that there is God's endless chachma, and then he creates man, and man has a soul which can partake of that chachma. Alright? Now, what is perfection in man? Perfection in man means when man's soul is in a state where it can best partake of the metaphysical reality. So Yahdus is not just a philosophy of emotional happiness. That's not what Yahdus is. Yahdus really is more than that. Yahdus is a metaphysical system, which means that Yahdus posits that there is a metaphysical reality, a reality beyond our senses and beyond our emotions. That reality is the ultimate reality. Man has the ability to partake of that reality. When does he partake of that reality? When does his soul partake of that reality? His soul partakes of that reality when he engages in Chochmas Elokim. However, the satisfaction of that reality is not attainable as long as he's physical. There is an attending satisfaction to that metaphysical experience, but it is completely covered in this world. There is no such phenomenon in this world. In our world, all we experience is emotional, physical satisfactions. However, the state, the fact that the soul has actually gone through ideas means that the soul has partaken of a certain metaphysical reality. And that metaphysical reality is what remains with the soul after the body is gone. But it is, that's the way Yahdus has a structure. So it's not simply a matter of happiness. Yeah, happiness is, what does happiness mean when the Torah says you'll be happy? It means that the best way for the best attitude of the best way for a person in order to be the most conducive state to receive the metaphysical reality is also the happiest state emotionally. That if a person achieves a level where he is in line with the metaphysical, he's partaking of this metaphysical reality to the greatest degree, he is in fact psychologically the happiest. So he has happiness in this world, you see. But it's more than just having happiness in this world, in a temporary sense. So he had 70 happy years, very nice. Not that that is something small, you see, it's very seldom achieved. But nevertheless, there is something more than that. What is more is that he has partaken of a certain metaphysical reality. That is really what remains with him. The soul has experienced a contact with a different world, when, as it went through
the world of ideas, the soul has experienced contact with a certain metaphysical reality. The fact that the soul has made that contact and has partaken of that metaphysical reality, that part of that, actually the fact that it has partaken of that metaphysical reality guarantees, so to speak, or gives the soul its eternal quality. That's from where the soul gets its eternity. Its eternity is from partaking of the metaphysical reality. That's the way Yahadus has it structured. You see?
It hasn't partaken,
as long as the psychological and the physical, and the psychological is the physical, as long as the psychological and the physical, you see, are in control, and that's the way it is in this existence, so the soul can never have any enjoyment from the metaphysical. It cannot have any metaphysical enjoyment. The Rambam explains that's why the Torah says in the Vayim and the Chazal that the enjoyment of Olam Haba is incomparable to the enjoyment that a person has on this world, because it's an enjoyment that stems from a metaphysical. Its essence is different. Just like there is a physical reality, and the physical reality is capable of giving a person a certain enjoyment, which is a psychological enjoyment, there's a metaphysical reality, and the metaphysical part of man is capable of perceiving that fulfillment. Enjoyment really is nothing more than the fulfillment of when the entity fulfills its ultimate purpose. That's when there's enjoyment. When does an animal have enjoyment? When it has all its needs, when it's in line with its nature. When a person's in line with his psychological nature, he experiences a certain enjoyment. The enjoyment of man is far greater than the enjoyment of animal. And so is the pain of man far greater, because man's nature is a more subtle nature, and it has a different specific requirements, and its fulfillment is more difficult, but simultaneously its satisfaction is far greater. But the Rambam says that this is still only in the realm of the physical. It's a higher form of the physical. But the enjoyment that stems from the metaphysical is in a different realm, and since its nature is superior, its enjoyment is superior. The only thing is that in this world we cannot experience such an enjoyment. That's only Ayin LaRasa, that's Olam Haba. In Olam Haba, that experience, the soul has that experience, but it's a different part of man. Now, since that's the case, so the soul partakes. Insofar as it partakes of the metaphysical reality, that's how much it partakes of the enjoyment of the metaphysical reality when it reaches its ultimate state, which is after death. Since that is the case, so Chazal held that it is proper for man to know as much as he can about what precisely that metaphysical state consists of, or in what way man approaches the metaphysical reality to a greater degree. And therefore the psukim reflected the idea of different levels of partaking of the metaphysical reality. And what are the different levels? The different levels are those numbers that the Chazal point out. One is the lowest, two is, some of them you can understand why it's real. Two is already chavrusa, means that the man is, his soul is engaged in a higher form. Three is even more, three is really a group, it's a different thing. Five is difficult already, five, wasn't it? Three and five, and five and ten. But the psukim tell us that there is a different metaphysical reality insofar as Chochmas Hashem is concerned when you're involved on these different levels. That's really the purpose of this Mishnah. The purpose of this Mishnah is to point out and to give us knowledge of the different levels of metaphysical reality that the soul partakes of in its involvement in Chochmah. The question, of course, is what are the particular numbers? Let's understand 10. Let's take the ones we understand. We'll work towards the middle. One we understand, okay? One, we understand, one means it means Vav and Chochmah. Two, we understand, two means that there's a dialogue, and a dialogue is a different level of Chochmah. That's two. What is ten? What is ten? Let's leave three and five. What is ten? Adam means the people. Okay. Adam means the people. Adam means the people. Elokim needs a badaskel. Now, what does Ada reflect? What is the idea of Ada? So, Ada is a reflection of God's will insofar as the nation is concerned. Because Ada really represents the entire nation. A minion really represents the whole Kol Yisrael. So, it means that when a person is involved, in Chachmas Hashem, in a situation where it reflects God's will, that's an additional quality. In other words, where a man is involved in Chachmas Hashem, in a situation where this involvement reflects God's will, that's a different level of approaching God. So therefore, when he has 10 reflects the entire klal. So therefore, this is a reflection of the concept of the entire nation following God's will. So insofar as his involvement in Chochmah is concerned, the nature of the involvement is a different one. Alright? That's 10. Okay. Insofar as the perfection of the soul is concerned, the involvement with the group that represents the entire nation fulfilling God's will is a different kind of involvement. It's a different level of involvement. It means he's approaching God in a different way. In other words, three really is a group. Three really is an additional concept. Three really is a group that's involved in Chachmas Hashem. So a group that's involved in Chachmas Hashem is a different level. That's why you had already the Gemara says you eat three people eat together and they don't say they're terrorists. That's Gilu, Achlam, Mizif, and Mason. So it's a group. Three is a group. Okay, what is five? I would say this, that five represents a multitude. Five is the smallest amount that represents a multitude. That represents a multitude. It's the smallest multitude. So five represents a multitude of people following God. That's what it means. Five represents a multitude of people. Three is a group, five is a multitude. Ten is really, ten reflects Kol Yisrael. Ten reflects a nation. Ten is a reflection of a nation. Okay. So what does it mean? The point is like this. Why do you have to have Pesukim for this? Why do you have to have Pesukim for this? Because really, what you're trying to uncover here is a certain situation that is most conducive to the perfection of the soul. And it's difficult for man to know precisely where exactly to draw the line. Where exactly to draw the line in terms of how it affects him. So the only way I could know is if I have a proof from some outside source. So since the purpose of the Torah is that the soul should be placed in a state in this world in which it is affected most favorably, so a person must be able to know what situation affects man most favorably in terms of his approaching God. So you have to know precisely how and where to draw the qualitative lines, and what situation is one affected precisely. It's difficult for a person to know this just by his senses, you see, because it has to do with the part of man that is beyond the human ken to a degree. So therefore, the only way I could know it really is from the Pesukim. It's from the Pesukim, from the Torah itself. So therefore, it's necessary for the Torah to draw the lines exactly as to where the soul is affected most favorably with regard to its involvement in the Chachmah. And that's why I have a pasuk for everyone. What it means first of all, is like this. that with regard to man, that man draws these psychological, draws these, well, first of all, the first two are functional. The first two are functional. I say one and two is functional. One and two is definitely functional. But besides the fact that it's functional, man draws in his mind, has these lines drawn. There's the line, there's, in other words, man has in his mind, these lines are drawn in his mind. There's being alone.